Chapter 23. The emergency lights bathed everything in red as Rapp pulled himself through the tunnel using his elbows. After a reasonably spacious entrance, the shaft had shrunk down to a cramped 3 feet wide by 2 feet high. Rapp had suffered from mild claustrophobia since he was a kid. Years of fighting in the open spaces of America and the Middle East had made it worse for good reason. The speed, endurance, and accuracy that gave him his edge tended to be neutralized in these environments. The fact that Gould's feet were close enough to his face that he could smell the rubber soles offered some comfort. If anyone discovered them and hosed down the tunnel from the mansion side, the Frenchman would act as a reluctant shield. Even more important, the shaft was too tight for Gould to turn on him.
"I think I see it," the Frenchman said, his whisper echoing through the narrow space. 20 meters.
Rapp's grip on his Glock tightened as they continued forward to a steel wall covered in surface rust. They found a keypad similar to the one at the tunnel's entrance, and Gould punched in another lengthy code. There was a moment of tense silence, followed by the hum of an electric motor. Rapp lowered the night vision goggle mounted to his helmet and flipped it on. The next generation system combined the light amplification of traditional starlight scopes with thermal imaging. Normally, he'd have refused it due to the bulk and weight, but there were enough unknowns about the basement they were about to enter to make it worthwhile. Tests at the farm suggested the unit would give him a solid view of the ambient environment while highlighting the body heat of human targets.
"You ready, Mitch?"
"Go." Gould shoved the steel barrier outward and threw himself to the dirt floor on the other side. He rolled smoothly to the right while Rapp went left as planned. The light amplification capability of the goggle was barely functional due to the depth of the darkness. Thermal picked up a little temperature variation, but other than Gould glowing orange, most everything just read as hazy shades of green. Rapp had to move far slower than he would have liked, avoiding the unidentifiable clutter on his way to an overturned barrel. Gould nearly tripped, but managed to save it and take cover behind something that looked vaguely like an ancient winepress. Rapp spotted a reddish smear at the edge of his peripheral vision, but didn't bother tracking it. Most likely a rat. Other than that, nothing. No sound. No movement. In fact, nothing that would suggest anyone had been down there in years. Rapp swept his gun over a dark hole in the wall that he guessed was a medieval well and then slipped around the left side of the barrel. He motioned Gould forward, and the Frenchman moved cautiously to a low pile of rubble. They leapfrogged that way, moving purposefully until they found themselves at the base of the staircase that led up to the main house. Gould pointed right to a rectangle in the wall that their goggles shaded blue, the cold steel of the entrance to Obrecht's safe room. Rapp covered the Frenchman as he ran to it and smeared a bead of epoxy into the narrow gap between the edge of the door and the jamb. Not exactly high-tech, but it would be enough to keep the Swiss banker from gaining access should things go south. Obrecht's only option at that point would be the tunnel, where he would flee right into the welcoming arms of Joe Maslick. Gould returned and led up the stairs with Rapp a few steps behind. They retracted their goggles and removed their helmets when the light bleeding around the basement door became strong enough for them to see. Rapp stowed the helmets beneath a stack of stained towels on the landing, while the Frenchman slid a fiber-optic cable beneath the door. The image from the tiny camera read out on his phone, displaying exactly what they'd hoped to see, an empty hallway. Rapp activated his throat mic and spoke quietly. "We're exiting the basement under the first floor. Stan, give me a sit-rep." No response. It was one of the unavoidable drawbacks to their plan. His silence could mean that he was dead and that they were walking into an ambush, or it could mean that he was with Obrecht and not in a position to respond.
"Scott, update. Stan got called in to meet with Obrecht while you were offline. No communication from him since. We're in position and ready to go."
"Roger that. Stan, if you can hear this and you're in Obrecht's office, try to toggle your mic."
He waited for a moment, and then the banker's accented voice came over his earpiece.
"I've had my people check on this, and I can assure you that my bank does not—"
The feed went dead, and Rapp gave Gould a thumbs up. Hurley was where he was supposed to be, but couldn't communicate beyond briefly pressing the button on his key fob. Gould eased the door open and slipped through with Rapp following. The main staircase was to their left, but it was the centerpiece of the mansion's entry hall and in full view of no fewer than 6 windows. They went right, skirting the kitchen and entering a narrow servant's staircase. Gould aimed his Glock upward as they ascended, with Rapp keeping an eye on their flank. When they came to the door at the top, Gould did another quick search with the fiber-optic camera and then went through. They were halfway up the wide hallway when they heard a woman's voice singing quietly. The two men ducked into a bedroom and pressed their backs against the wall behind the half-open door. Of all the rooms in the mansion she could have chosen to clean that day, she picked that one. Rapp grabbed Gould's wrist when the assassin aimed his silenced pistol at the back of her head. While the proliferation of surveillance cameras throughout the world was a serious drawback for men in their profession, the invention of the iPod almost made up for it. Rapp spotted the ubiquitous white earphones and motioned toward the hallway. She never noticed the two armed men slipping out of the room only a few feet behind her, concentrating instead on the sheets she was unfolding and the latest dance track from Madonna. They were able to pick up their pace on the thick carpet, and it took only seconds to reach the second-to-last door on the right. According to Gould, Leo Obrecht's office was just beyond. Rapp put an ear to the wall, but it was too thick to hear anything inside. Hopefully, they'd find Obrecht and Hurley having a pleasant conversation over tea. A set of flex cuffs and some duct tape would be all it would take to get their package ready to go back through the tunnel. Next stop, a CIA black site in Bulgaria. Rapp put a hand on the knob and nodded a silent 3 count. He didn't throw open the door like he normally would, instead pushing it gently enough that Obrecht wouldn't get spooked if he saw it. Luck was with him. They slipped inside the study unnoticed, the book-lined walls and tapestries absorbing what little sound they made. At the far side, a heavy-set man with his back to them was poking at the embers in a massive stone fireplace. A modern steel sculpture partially obscured both him and a portion of the right side of the room, but not enough that Rapp couldn't immediately determine that Hurley wasn't there. The man at the fireplace was the size Rapp expected from the surveillance photos, and he had the right expensive suit and short-cropped gray hair. But there was something about him that seemed off. The barely perceptible athleticism in the way he stood. The effortless way he handled the heavy iron poker. Rapp spun toward Gould, but was just a fraction of a second too slow. The Frenchman swept a foot low, taking Rapp's legs out from under him. He hit the carpet rolling, just as the man near the fireplace spun around to reveal the MP5 in his free hand. The sculpture obscured his head, but Rapp resisted the urge to go for a body shot. He knew instinctively that the man's bulk was the result of full body armor. It was a perfect way to imitate an overweight banker while making him impervious to small arms fire. There was a weakness in the mercenary's preparations, though, his expensive Italian shoes. Rapp fired a round into the left one and used his momentum to swing his Glock toward Gould. "Don't do it, Mitch." The assassin had his own pistol lined up in a two-handed grip, and while Rapp could no longer see the murk behind him, the silence suggested he hadn't fallen. If he was tough and disciplined enough to stay upright with the ball of his foot missing, it was likely that the MP5 was also on target. "Drop the weapon, Mitch, and don't get your hands anywhere near that throat mic." Rapp let the Glock fall to the carpet. "And stands." He reached for Hurley's Kimber gold match as he slowly stood. "You've got 2 guns trained on you, Mitch, and neither one of us are the illiterate goat herders you're used to, understand?" "There's no way Obrecht can be paying you enough for this," Rapp said, retrieving the Kimber and then letting it fall from his hand. "$15 million and a new identity so clean even the CIA won't be able to track me. But it's not the money." "What then?" Rapp said, though he already knew the answer. The truth was, he always had. "You're my only failure, Mitch. I thought I'd forget about it as time went on, but it just got worse." He eased left to put himself in a position that would allow him to avoid a crossfire if Rapp made a move. "I had you dead to rights in Afghanistan. I can't believe the idiot who hired me blew it like that. What about your wife and daughter, Louis? How do they fit in with your new identity?" It took Gould a few seconds to respond. "Seemed like a fair trade. I lose them, but I become the man who killed a legend." The door opened, but it didn't even cause a flicker of distraction in Gould. He kept his eyes locked on target as Stan Hurley was pushed through.
The old man staggered and nearly fell, holding the back of his head with a blood-soaked hand.
"Stan," the Frenchman said cheerfully, "you're just in time to be the icing on my cake."